today on this decompression session, as you can see, I wanted to do something slightly different, and that was half a decompression session and half an update on Australia, as I am 2 days out from flying away back to London, then back to France, back to home. And it's been an incredible mixture of, well, work, play, self-discovery, all of the cliches, but I wanted to just maybe dig into those in a way that's helpful for me and dispel a lot of the myths around that, dispel a lot of the assumptions around that, and talk about what was actually really hard, what was really rewarding, and the people that I met. That's always the overarching thing, is there's things you can do, there's things you can see. I think only nature and its beauty can get close to the relationships we'll share with other people. And in terms of decompressing things, coming out here for me was a pleasure. Of course, it was expensive. Doesn't make sense financially. It's not one of those things I can just jet away with no worries, but it was a very deliberate choice to invest in seeing friends I haven't seen in 7 years. I came out to Australia a number of years ago with some friends I met through cricket, number of guys that came over to play for us, and I ended up getting along with them. A deliberate effort to do so because I knew they were from another part of the world, a different way of thinking, a different culture, and as much as it's not too different, I found that my time, when I came out here to visit them, Australia's incredible. You get nature, you get city, you get suburb, you get people, you get things that are not so different from what I'm used to living in the UK. But there's enough here. It's like you see parakeets are like pigeons. They're just everywhere, or they're these particular kind of what Ethan called bin chickens. A friend of mine, Ethan Hutcher, name's Hutcher on Instagram. You can check him out. Bin chickens, but these tropical birds are just walking around like it's normal, like they've taken a city and planted it in the tropics, which is what they did. So in terms of trying to stay true to maybe more of the mental health side, I think the biggest thing I struggled with was having run away from the difficulty. End of last year, I was on the high side of manic depression. And for those of you that don't know what manic depression is, I don't think it's anything very different from what we all feel are kind of highs, whether they be natural or unnatural highs. And then we have our lows. But as a manic depressive, I feel like my highs are supercharged. I kind of see them as like very unstable, and I kind of feel like I'm not always part of myself, and I'm saying yes to things, or I've got these incredible ideas. And you do get this energy, you get this kinetic force of barriers being dropped in your head, kind of like walls that are laid flat, so we can run through things other people might not even be able to see. And we can make connections, have business ideas, build things, try and think about creatively having a big output, or it's not difficult to try and imagine taking over the world, you know, those kind of manic stages, which is unstable as it sounds, right? And end of last year, I said yes to a lot of things. I created new projects. I pushed different boundaries while still maintaining the things that are important, which is this podcast, which is my coaching work, which is my songwriting, kind of the aspirations there and the difficulties. And I kind of came off this huge manic phase just as the industry and my friends that I work with were all kind of shutting down for the year in November. And instead of being clever and taking that break then, I just kept pushing and pushing and pushing. And I got things done. I did achieve things, but it was so destructive having to unpick all of that at the start of this year and realize the relationships that I may or may not have affected. And I feel like I've done my rounds of that dreadful kind of, I know I've done something wrong here. I know this person may have been affected by that. I have a good feeling I've said this to this person, haven't delivered on it. That was the biggest thing, is saying all the things I wanted to do, all the massive plans I had, and looking at starting up a nonprofit and realizing I know exactly what I would do, how I'd like to do it, who I'd like to do it with, but it costs money. And as much as I'm lucky enough to have far more than most people are in the world, all of us are listening to this just on a device or whatever, but I don't have enough to really make the impact I want to make. And it brings me back to the idea of it's a teaching that you have to have your own cup full before you can pour it out for others. And that's very self-explanatory. And that was hard because I involved a lot of friends, a lot of people, clients, even some of you guys maybe that listen to this, trying to get that foundation up and running, which one day will happen. But I also realized that the beauty of the people that listen to this show, particularly those of you guys who probably listen to this episode of the show is I can try and make an impact on people's well-being, their mental health, their perceptions of themselves by just being honest about my own vulnerabilities and struggles. So yeah, unpicking all the mistakes that I made. And as I said earlier, nothing really comes close to the people I've met here in Australia, the relationships I built. So that's why it was most painful that all the frenetic and manic work that I did last year may well have compromised some personal relationships, and if not ending them, definitely setting them back in terms of trust. And having had relationships that, you know, when trust has been an issue, that takes time to rebuild, and you do get back to a really wonderful new place, but it hurts to do that, and almost as though I wasn't in control of what I was doing. But also, definitely was in control, definitely made all those choices, decided to do those things. And that's the kind of difficulty of what I call manic depression. Other people might call it something different, but is knowing when to stop, knowing when you need to put a tennis ball under the accelerator, so to speak, so you can only go so fast, but it feels so good to go so quickly. And it brings me back again to a friend of mine who talked about her experiences of manic depression. And she said it's like climbing a hill, and on a scale of 1 to 10, you know, you're kind of gently climbing and climbing and climbing. You get to 7, you get to 8, it feels awesome. And you get to 9, and it feels like you're going supersonic. And then she says, never go to 10. She says, and you get to 10, you go, oh wow, this feels amazing. And then you go to 11 and 12, and then you realize that you've stepped off the cliff. And even though you're soaring, you're going so quickly that you're soaring, that 10, that 11, that 12 feels like hypersonic pleasure. And it's all natural. This is the crazy thing. You have to take any drugs if you're a manic depressive to feel this kinetic and prolific and creative. But then you plummet off the cliff, and it's so dangerous. You know, for some people that can lead to the state where they are suicidal. For some people like myself who've been there, I'm at the vibration whereby I remember I was trying to go to sleep in France, and my head, it felt like someone was taking my head and just spinning it around, and my eyes were kind of like almost buzzing, and there was so much in my head that was what I was planning, which was exciting, what I feel like I need to get rid of, but I was still going on with. And then that also affects your real life, personal life, friends, family, everything, your health. I woke up and felt like feels like someone had flattened my whole body, and I was just some kind of like floating head that couldn't do anything in the day apart from the bare minimum. And I wasn't behind my eyes, as I like to call it, which just is how I explain the state of when I am feeling in myself. You know, say you've done some exercise, say you've got up at a decent time, been able to do a bit of a workout, maybe a bit of mindfulness, and you start your day present. You know, even stuff like, you know, you have a shower after the workout, and you feel like you're there. And when you speak to someone, you feel like you have space to listen to them. And when you speak, you're coherent. Those are things that probably when I do this show, that's the state I'm in. So you guys maybe couldn't imagine that, but some days I can't speak. I can't put words together. I flip sentences. I can't be clear to adults, and it's embarrassing. It's really embarrassing. And that's when I'm not behind my eyes. Like I said, I'm kind of floating behind it, and so far away from where I'd like to be for the people I work with or the aspirations I have. So in some kind of summary, without trying to be too coherent, because the point of these is to decompress, is that I was kind of dealing with manic depression. And I remember Stephen Fry, for those of you that are UK, US, you probably heard him as well, but and Australia, you would have heard him. But Stephen Fry spoke beautifully about how in his manic phases, as he's an author, actor, sure, he's a producer, presenter, writer, just an incredible human being, and very, very closely connected to my generation of experience as an English person growing up around those people. He's very well known, and he talks about his swings with manic depression and his manic episodes of hyper creativity, and everything's wonderful. And then the days where he wants to throw himself off a cruise ship or end his life, you know, in a quiet corner of the world, because he runs away. And I think, am I, you know, did I run away from my life by coming to Australia? And in part, probably yes. But also, for context, I came out to watch two of the kindest, warmest people in the world get married, or in my world, you know, not the world, but they've got to be close. And their families had a huge impact on me 7 years ago when I came here. And it's part of the reason I came with one of my best friends who happens to be my cousin. And we both looked at each other and went, damn COVID, damn 20s, damn any kind of logic, let's go. And we crammed every single day that he was here with things, or two or three things. And we were so lucky, the people we stayed with, things we were able to experience, the people we met that pushed us to do things. I have my birthday out here. Valentine's Day was out here. So I have a very understanding partner who kind of saw how caged up I was, and I needed to go. I needed to just shoot off. And yes, it was expensive, but luckily enough, I have awesome clients that I work with and people like yourselves as well that listen to this show. So I was able to earn a little bit of money out here and keep things ticking over, which felt chaotic, but every day just chipping away for an hour or so, or sometimes less, just keeping things going and making sure the work I've done isn't ruined by these problems I've created. So the different layers of what I'm doing, like coaching, podcasting, aspirations of songwriting, producing for other people, I tried to do management, I tried to take on the foundation, but they're not always things that, despite the things I want to do, they're not always going to work at the same time. So having to realize that, like everyone told me, you can't do too many things at once. And despite me thinking I can, that was hard as well. That's a sense of pride, of ego, of that I can do these things and I didn't. It's just embarrassing. It's embarrassing. And especially if it affects my working prospects or relationships with people I've worked very hard to know, that's just almost untenable. So after the first 2 weeks of being here in Australia, which was all pleasure, it was just completely pleasure. There were times that were incredibly difficult. And the next thing I want to talk about is those self-doubting times and how exhausting it is just to get up sometimes, and how there's no sympathy for that. And that's not an essence of being lazy. It's almost doing too much over a period of time that you burn out. It's the term is burning out. But I was so burned out when I got here. And then I had all these incredible things to do that I just deferred and delayed. And there were times where it tried to creep through. But luckily I had people here that I was with, or I was able to lean on my friends and family here who I have no blood connections to at all. But I went from house to house, family to family, helped at the wedding, was part of the wedding, part of the bridal party, just immersed in their families. And it was a bit surreal. And it was kind of a baptism of warmth. And I actually ended up feeling comfortable enough to share with them how crap I was feeling and how low I was feeling. And just the way they responded as a group was pretty humbling, but very hard to do. Like, I knew they'd be warm, but to say that to people and not be a burden is what I was struggling with. And yeah, so after my cousin left and I was doing less stuff, there was a day where I was sort of, you know, at the point where you're like, do I even get out of bed? You know, I'm on the other side of the world in these beautiful places with really kind people who will do anything to help you. And I'm sat there, you know, trying to hide in bed. It's like, what the hell is this? Like, what the fuck is this? And I think it's having to, instead of trying to push it down the door, really escape, you know, in terms of like a mood eating or anything extreme like that. I didn't. I guess I slept a bit too much sometimes, but jet lag, and also I was pushing both ends of the spectrum, getting up early for clients, but then going to bed really late because I wanted to go out and see people, and not even drinking, you know, maybe like four or five drinks have passed my lips this whole trip. But it's just, again, trying to find that really natural high without it going over the edge, like not, again, jumping off the end of the cliff. So yeah, and I wanted to get to the idea of how I also booked part of this trip. I extended this trip to accommodate going to Sydney, because I'd heard that's where the music industry is. And again, I'm kind of just making decisions on half information, but I feel like that's how I'm really going to learn. And I'm also, honestly, I think that's who I am. I'm a traveler. All my genetics and my dispositions would indicate that. And not to say I always want to travel all the time, but that was what part of being in bands was. And I had the dreams. Having to let go of those was strange, but I tried to do it in the best way. Again, went to see Red Hot Chili Peppers and Post Malone here at what's called Marvel Stadium. And it was like 40, 50,000 people. The Chili Peppers are, I mean, even now after the buzz of seeing them and being in the same space, I still remember them being one of the best bands I've ever seen, for reasons that are obvious and those that are completely almost invisible, very subtle when you go and see them. And just almost saying goodbye to that part of my life was very painful, but going, it's cool. Maybe I won't ever perform on stage again, but I'll find some way of doing something significant. And all of that happening, and while meeting great people, while doing silly things and just experiencing life. And the biggest challenge was when I got to Sydney, and I'd extended this trip expressly for that. I'd told people I was coming here to do so. Very luckily, through Ed Graves at Rainbow Wood, I knew one or two people that we'd kind of worked with or he'd mentioned, and I just went out on a whim and some people let me down very kind of actively. But then I found that was sometimes the nature of the industry in Australia, because there isn't as much money. It's very hard for people to maintain in the same way. So it's not a judgment, but you do experience being let down. And then there were people that had very natural or horrific things happen to them personally, but they still managed to accommodate. And I spent time with one, and you'll hear from them on the show, so I won't really speak about them specifically because I don't know when this will come out too, but just seeing the fortitude of people that are out there in Sydney, and even in an industry where there isn't as much money up front as there is in the UK and the US, which is, you just assume there is, but you go to different countries and then couple of things is that, yeah, there's not as much money, and also there's not as much culture of people going out finding music, creating music. It's so barren. And like I said, the people that pulled through, not only did I get to spend time with them and meet them and start that really important relationship of possibly a working relationship, but just meeting people that you learn from. Like, under the guise of podcasting, I get to meet people and I get to hear all their best tips and stories and thoughts and practicalities and differences. And there's just a million things. So rich meeting someone in person. You learn so much more. I wish, again, I could video properly, or you guys could be here to interview the people I meet, but I get to listen to them, and then I get to, well, interview them, and then we build a relationship and find projects to work on. All that work starts with being in person. And a lot of people said that, you know, even though we couldn't write with everyone I met, they were like, this feels like the start of actually getting to know someone. And I got in like 4 hours or so with one producer who I never even knew I was going to meet. It's just a product of being here and turning up and having the show. So thanks to you guys for listening to the show enough that I continue it, and I love doing so, and the value of having it, but also the value of being able to connect with incredible new people I'd love to work with. And it's a lot to explain, so this one might go on a touch longer, but I want to highlight some of the darker bits in a moment. But I'm still kind of enjoying what I was able to achieve and all the pressure I put on myself when I booked it, 7 months ago. Me and my cousin booked the trip, and then I extended my trip, and I was like, right, I'm going to somehow find sessions in Sydney. And worked with a credible producer. He is a songwriter as well. I'm getting him to see that. You'll hear from him on the show. He said as well, there's no industry for his genre out in Sydney. He's trying to create it. And I went to Sydney and I saw that, and I was kind of blown away, because naturally he's incredible business-wise, incredible situationally and culturally for Australians. Sydney's a certain way of doing it. And then Melbourne is actually probably far more my speed, and have like four families essentially now. And I meet people every day that feel like, even if I'm not going to see them for a couple of years, again, like this, I'll come back 7 years later and I'll just be welcomed, and there'll be new kids in the family, new people to meet, people getting married. It's just overwhelmingly positive. That's why I knew I wanted to be here. And it's sunny. And I think I've just been stuck in a hole emotionally and physically for a very long time, and just getting distance away from everything in my life. Again, very privileged to do so. It costs money to come here, it costs money to be here, and the people that have put me up in their houses, it cost them money for me to be here. So making sure I'm trying to help and be involved and do everything I can feels nice. It doesn't feel manic. It feels within the bounds. Yeah. So back to going to Sydney. I think the biggest thing from that was realizing how much I doubt myself, how low my opinion of myself is, how low my opinion of my own value is, how that's not how people see me. So it creates this strange, it's a nice compliment that people don't see me like that, but I feel that so deeply and so often. I want to find a way to get my value up to at least a baseline, whereby when people meet me, they don't get freaked out because I'm second guessing everything I say or do, or I don't have the confidence to follow through, even though I know I can write, I know I can do everything at a standard, professional standard, or if not, I'll learn, I can. But I just have such a low opinion of myself that I feel like I deserve to be ignored. I deserve to be delayed. I deserve to be not worked with, deserve to be left. Or I think every time I make a mistake in a relationship with someone professionally, personally, I feel like they're going to abandon, they're going to run, they're going to hate me. all these strange things that I realize are just connected to my first couple of years that I don't remember. And I have to, as an adult, just know that that's what it is. And the times when it's not right, you know, have to really get behind being accountable and saying sorry. And doing that is, again, it touches something I don't really understand yet. So all of that. But I remember also I'd worked with someone at the start of the week. He made the effort to book a studio for us, for our sessions. He made the effort that I could meet his A&R at his label, understand the scale of that, get a few tips, just be in a building like that. We did two songs off the bat. And, you know, second one was one he kind of fell in love with and I didn't even know I had in me. I might talk about that another day because that's more about songwriting. But meeting someone like him and then him making the effort to not only see me for another day in the set studio, but he took me out for a show on this boat in Sydney Harbour. Just like these things that you just, again, I feel like I need to try and understand that even to my opinion of myself is really low. Like the things that have happened to me can start to be a little reflector of trying to feel that worth inside myself going like, well, sure, you might not like yourself. You might not be where you want to be yet because I'm not. I'm miles away in my mind. Professionally, for sure. Emotionally getting there. But despite all these things that are happening inside, I want to realize, well, I had all this, like this person was, they really enjoyed meeting me, all these brand new people. They got along with you. They saw value in you and they were very kind. They didn't need to be. They made effort to see you and all these things I think about, you know, making sure I'm bringing value to a situation and helping people that I can and all these things, you know, but mainly it was just working with this guy and then he'd taken me out to the show. I was going to meet all of his friends. We had an incredible night. It was so funny and silly. It reminded me of the humor of when I was younger and just being kinetic, frenetic, just doing things, having fun. Again, I think I had like one, maybe two drinks, but it didn't matter. And even the next morning, my friend was like, that doesn't happen. It's never normally that crazy. And we kind of laughed because there was no point to it. There was no goal. There was no purpose. But he said something pretty profound. He's like, not everything needs to have a purpose. Sometimes the idea is to enjoy yourself because everyone is struggling so much. There's so much conflict and difficulty. Like, let's have a night where we just doesn't make sense. We laugh. We do stupid things, say silly things deliberately to get that feeling. So pretty profound in a weird way. But I remember before I went out, you know, this is how ridiculous it sounds to complain, but this is maybe how I can highlight the internal thing I'm dealing with is about to go after writing sessions, meeting four producers who I'm feeling like if I do a good job, we'll be friends for a long time. People I work with, written a number of songs I'm really proud of, went, did the, you know, Kuji De Bondi, like dream walking and listening to incredible podcasts like Rick Rubin, Dan Carlin talk about creativity. Yeah, this dream and nice host, easy time in the city. But the night before, you know, walking to this bar to meet people to then go onto this free show that I've been invited onto and people bought me drinks and they got around me, meaning they made an effort to speak to me and say hello and be, you know, what do you think of Sydney? How are you doing? Everyone included me and I felt like I was sort of the instigator they blame me as, but the guest. And but just before this, my head was saying, go back to your Airbnb and sleep. Go back and just hide under the covers. Even though it's sunny, even though you've got this free ticket to this show that you, with your friend and all these opportunities, you know, you deepen that relationship in a genuine way that also serves you guys working together, which is the point, right? You want to write incredible things. You want to have a positive influence on someone in your relationship. It's not manipulation. It's like if you get along and you write really well together, that's a positive influence. But like I said, walking to this place, it's like, I'll just turn around, just go back. Just go and hide in your room. Go and sit in the dark. Go and watch Netflix. Like, you don't deserve to be there. They're not going to like you. It's going to be awkward. You're not going to have anything to do. You're not going to enjoy it. And they're not just whispers. They're like bodily responses. If they were small whispers, I think I'd be okay. I wouldn't worry about it. But it feels like my whole body was just dragging me back from like my stomach to everything. And that was hard. It kept happening before that as well. That was the biggest one. I knew I had to get through it, but it's just exhausting and it's very unseen and there's no sympathy for it, but just being vulnerable in my experience can alleviate it. If I speak it out, then it exists. Even if it's just to me, no one listens to this, it exists. And that was the biggest red flag, but that was the last one so far. There are times, like even this morning, like waking up, working with a client, knowing I'm going to get some stuff done. Coming back to France, I can really double down on all the people I'm working with and the content I can put out and the work I can get on with remotely. These people I've met out here, but I know in the UK, I can be back with the person I care most about in the world, back in a beautiful part of the world. But still, get up. These things that used to be so easy, or especially in a manic phase, you don't even think about. I was up at about 4 a.m. every day working out, doing work, doing 10 hours of work in this manic phase for a month or so, or long enough to feel like it was the new normal. And then, as I said earlier, when you're manic, it feels like the walls are not only not there, they're laid down for you to run, to walk over. Whereas when I'm in the other side of it, which my dad warned me about, which I didn't listen to because I didn't respect his opinion, because I don't, it's just been the way that we have and haven't got on in our lives, but for many other reasons apart from what it sounds like. When you're in the lows, it's like the walls are 60 feet high to just get up, to just go and do something basic, to go to the shops, to go and do things you would enjoy before, like to go and see friends. Like even yesterday, one of my tattoos is face fear and dread, which is the idea that when you're feeling fear of doing something, it's actually excitement. It's like anticipation. I'm trying to recondition myself to, then in my natural response to everything as a kid, like riding a bike, swimming, food, it was terror. It wasn't fear. It was terror. And I'm trying to get on the other side of that, because some things I've worked on getting over, because I wanted to learn to write. I wanted to perform. I wanted to lead to speaking to people and helping people. That was what was really interesting to me. But some things, they still trigger that, especially when I'm on the low side of mania, as I am maybe as I'm coming out of it, I don't know. But yeah, very basic things feel impossible. Whereas the things that other people will never do in their lives, I might do 3 times in a week, but not giving myself credit for that. So then when I can't do something basic like getting out of bed or go to something that'll be really fun, it feels even worse because I'm aware of that. It's not like I'm feeling sorry for myself. I'm just bored of the exhaustion. So that's kind of at least the first part of it, and coming up on 30 minutes. So I don't want to drag people out, but if you're done, you can stop listening. But I think there's a few more things I wanted to pick out, and it's more just, it even felt really hard to get up and do this, to record this. And I'm trying to get around myself, trying to figure out how I have my actions dictate my feeling as opposed to waiting for my feelings to dictate my actions. And simply, if I have a better routine, and I realize when I get back to France, I'll probably get up at a good time, go and do some sort of exercise, listen to something positive and practical, normally Tim Ferriss and the people he associates with, and then get on with my day, and then be a human, and then go back to cooking, go back to cleaning, get back to being in a functional part of a relationship and a household. And of course, I somewhat of Peter Panned it, which hopefully makes sense to people. When you run away from your responsibilities, you never land, remain a child. I didn't really Peter Pan coming out here. I took it upon myself to try and get interviews, to try and get work, to all these things I did. And only now was I brave enough to come and talk about this. Because there's a part of me who existed for the first few days in Sydney. Was the first day I got there, I managed to speak to Hutcher for dinner, but that's all in our conversation, so I'll leave that out. But I was lucky enough to work with him again through Ed Graves at the studio. Check out Rainbow Wood, you will not be disappointed. And I still hadn't fixed the other, what I thought would be one or two other sessions, and I only had 4 days before I left, because I wanted to come back here to Melbourne. So I shortened my trip in Sydney, come back here to Melbourne to see everyone the last few days. But when I was in Sydney, I was 2 days in, I was sick, and I had one thing, and with no prospects of anything else. So I took myself out. I tried to take myself for runs. I listened to some good practical. I don't really like something that doesn't apply in terms of advice about life or relationships. I like practical things. So I tried to get out and walk around and enjoy the city. And I knew that if I didn't have sessions booked in, then that day, the hardest day, was when I did the most enjoyable thing, which was got on a bus, found out where I need to go, walk from one beach called Coogee to Bondi, which is the famous one. And they'd built into the rocks this walkway, and it was just ridiculously beautiful. 5-6 beaches with pools, surfing, covered little coves with rocks. And I like to climb a little bit. So just doing that stuff, like being in my body, behind my eyes, as I said. And I stopped halfway. Because the whole time I was trying to get away from that thought of I haven't managed to book this week. I haven't managed to line up anything for the rest of my week. And that was nagging. But I just decided to go and use the greatest distraction, which is nature. And Dan Carlin and Rick Rubin talking about creativity for 3 hours, which was too short. It's incredible. And stopping halfway with all that doubt, like trying to drag myself out and go, come on, get up, go and do it. You're going to regret it. You're going to hate yourself if you don't make the most of being in Sydney and build up some kind of experiences. But after getting one or two beaches up the 5 or 6 beach trail, I stopped to get a bit of food. And even eating out here has been hard. I can't find the right foods, or don't eat enough, and then I eat too much. And just that being out of rhythm with everything and making poor choices, and it's difficult. But stopped on this walk to get lunch, and I checked my messages because I felt like I was annoying people, bothering them, especially one of them who'd been through some loss and close in her family and stuff. So I was you know, completely resigned to not needing to see them or going to see them, because life is more important than songwriting. But, or to some people, it is songwriting, it is life, vice versa. But then I realized that not only had I got the session booked with Ethan the day before the boat party, so I get to go back into the studio, back to spend a bit of time around his label, and see all his friends go out. Then the day after that, I managed to see the person I was trying to see. And then the following day after the walk, someone had introduced me, just being a writer who has a podcast up in Sydney, got to meet this incredible human being who I didn't know about at all the next day. So, and then also the later in the week, I met another producer. So I met this pod of three who are incredible people, very kind, clever, conscientious, but they get paid for what they do. They're very good at it and they do it well. So exactly the people I want to not only know and learn from, because that's my base of learning, but I also do a podcast so you guys can learn from them. And then also I get to work with them. So it was this incredible relief while I was out on this walk that, yeah, I'd almost justified my time in Sydney. I've done, because I knew I could convert in some ways, whether it's, you know, things happen where you feel let down, but I don't take it personally. Things happen where you feel unseen and I don't take it personally. It's, again, battling with that. It's like you can't be rude to people. You can't ask for people's time. You have to see if you can make it work. You have to be conscientious. You have to be empathetic. But when I get to meet people, it's like a waterfall of love both ways. And I do my best to interview people, even if they're not being interviewed, you know, collect information on them and make them feel seen. And it's just it trying to make sure that it is natural, because it is. I love to hear from people and learn from people. And yeah, so I've been picking over that for a long time. And even to talk about vulnerability and things I was scared of, like even in paradise, so to speak, being able to swim a lot, just getting used to swimming. I'm bad at swimming. I was too scared to do it as a kid. And I learned when I was 14. Kurt Gross, he's a great writer. Check out Kurt Gross on Instagram. My original mentor, best friend, still saw him at Christmas, which is awesome. But learned to swim at 14. And then when I'm out here at 28, I'm just trying to get comfortable in the water, and it's embarrassing. I feel like I don't want people to watch me trying, because I learned to ride a bike like 2 years ago as well. That's just that fear that I've had. It's this really strange guttural fear, but I don't want that to be an excuse as I get older. If I have a family, if I'm even now, I have younger family members or cousins, and I feel like I want to be someone that can be looked up to. And also for myself, like I want to challenge what I'm shit at. Spiders, I probably never get over that. So in this room where I am, there was a chunky one and a huge moth as well, but you know, we live and learn. But things like swimming, I want to get over that, or food related fears, or all these things I've struggled with. I feel like if I can try and get towards them, then I might reduce the amount of times where I feel like I did, where I feel worthless, useless, pushed away, just go to bed, wrap up, hide from the world. I feel like if I can reduce the other things in my life that are hard, which are incredibly difficult, either they're barriers in my mind, feeling, or just me being lazy, I don't know. But if I can get over them, I can start to feel a bit more whole, feel a bit more stable. And if from stability, I think I can do my best work, even if it's not as hedonistic and fun as those manic highs. Honestly, I could do without them for a while if they're affecting prospects, relationships, things, but also they just give you so many things to unpick while you are burned out, which is a waste of time and stops you doing things I would like to be doing, need meaning things I want to do to progress. And then you'd have bad decisions. And then when real problems come up, you can't see them. So yeah, it feels good to be able to talk about that. So thank you if you've listened all the way. And if not, I get it. This is a songwriting podcast. All good. But hopefully today was a bit of an update, but I'd like to leave it on how I am actually feeling, because unpicking all that, I felt like I've done in preparation for this episode and things pulled off in Sydney, and I'm around great people, and the problems I'm dealing with day to day are very minimal, but they're all part of trying to have a better quality of life. And maybe in my explaining of what I'm trying to do, give other people a better quality of life, that would be ideal. But I feel good. I've spent time on the other side of the world. Things have fallen through, but that is the nature of it. I can't expect them to be perfect. And expectations is another big thing, which probably won't go into today. I'll double the length of this episode, but very lucky to have the friends I have, the family I have, people I'm staying with and their family. And hope to be able to reciprocate when their kids come over to the UK or France, and people I met here that made me feel welcome. I'd like to make them feel welcome when they're in Europe, and continue that interaction that's not to do with work, just wonderful people. And I learned so much about business from the time I spent with the guy who let me stay here with his family, and so much about family from others, and the others is a combination of both. And I really took the time to be that guy who just wanted to know, like, what is your advice on this? Do you have any, even if it starts as a joke, people give you really insightful perspectives from their lives and stories that you can use if you just are willing to be the annoying one and ask that question. Of most people want to tell you the things they're most proud of, or the things they think are useful. And yeah, that would be maybe what I would encourage people to do is, and also you don't need to go to a different country to realize these things. You can do this anywhere. And if you're brave enough and you can face it every day, but facing it alone might not be great. I had came out to reframe and to see old friends, like old friends are gold, and seeing them grow and their families grow and what that means and how it's managed, and like all these things that I kind of felt like I didn't put my own well-being, mental health and stability first, because I knew that when I'm here, I want to just do everything all the time. Try not to be manic, which I think I achieved, which was cool. I got close at times, but just do everything all the time and drink all these experiences. And even if it's a bit messy, I'll do my administration and organizing when I get home and figure out what's professional, what's personal. But just having those memories, those experiences, shared experiences that I'll take with me wherever I go, hopefully enrich me and make me a better person in my own mind. Yeah, so thank you. Thank you. I met a fan of the show who's way more passionate, and he's mad, and I think it's beautiful. You'll hear from him as well. So that kind of wraps up my self-indulgence, my own attempt at a diary of the CEO, which obviously I'd love to be, but that's not it. Doing my thing, and even that is, I feel like I'm trying to finally in my life do things that I want to do, not do things that I feel like I've just assimilated from other people's goals, and start to define my own goalposts. And that'll be a whole new challenge. But, and also not being bitter. Like, I love Diary of a CEO. It was really helpful. Some of the interviews I heard when I was out here, I love Tim Ferriss's work. Red Hot Chili Peppers, I love. Post Malone was freaking awesome. Keeping an open mind to new people that I meet, especially if they're younger, doesn't matter. Like, they've got some incredible insight, and actually spending time with people that are sort of like 4 or 5 years younger, whereby they are completely on the same level, but they just have this gear for fun, this gear for impulse that I feel like I'm forgetting how to use. So that's been insightful. And then spending a lot of time with people, with families and businesses and considerations, and there's too much to explain. So that was hopefully what was relevant. And you'll hear from the people on this trip, and I will be talking about this trip for a long time, and you'll be hearing about the projects that stem from this. So maybe it's just cool to timestamp it. That's all I'm doing right now. It's just timestamp it. And for my own sake, so I was here, I did it, and I have memories and people that I met. So thank you for listening to the show. And for those of you that talk to me, you know how much I appreciate that. And I also wanted to say, for those of you who are just sitting and listening, those of you who never intend to get involved, like, thank you probably even more so, because people that get involved, they might end up working with me or be part of the community or part of the show, part of the feature, but doesn't need to happen. I think those of you guys that can be far more mature than myself and just sit and soak something in, and maybe it pushes you to write, maybe it pushes you to do your own thing, start your own podcast, listening to this idiot do his own and how much goes into it, but at the same time, it's straightforward. So those of you guys that just sit and listen, you are better than me, and thank you. I will speak at you soon.